That's driven to center field. Dela Cruz got turned around, now looks off, and that ball is out of here. Francisco Lindor into the block, a three-run homer.
Hey, everyone. Welcome back to the Shea Station podcast. It's episode 126. It is Thursday, January 26th. I'm one of your co-hosts, Jack, a.k.a. Jolly. We are winding down towards the countdown to spring training. Joining me is Jerry Blevins. And Jerry, we have a very fun episode today.
It is fun. This is a fun breakdown. We decided to do our top 10 players ranked in the National League East. And that's very important. And it was way harder than anticipated. I knew it was going to be difficult. The ranking process was hard. I dove into a lot of things. There's, you know, we'll dive into it. We're going to do it in sections. So we'll each do our top five, and then we'll each do 6 through 10, and we'll break it down. There is deep discussions. I changed my list probably 5 times yesterday and last night. And then I did it, like, I moved 2 people again this morning, and I'm still a little bit shaken on where things are going to end up.
I'm looking at my list right now, and I like it, but I feel like when I hear you start talking and explaining your list, some changes might be made. I get swayed easily. I'm the first.
I'm with you, man. I'm open. Like, I'm smart enough to know that I don't know everything. So
yeah, right. Of course.
I'm always open for discussion. This is fun. Yeah, man. You want to get into it?
I think so. I just want to preface everything by saying, guys, if you've enjoyed the off-season content from Shea Station, we're really excited to bring back PPPs very soon, come March. Doing those again, 25 episodes in 25 days, covering all your players. If you don't want to miss that, make sure you subscribe to the Shea Station channel. If you're watching on YouTube, leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. We rarely ask because we don't want to, you know, throw that at the beginning of the podcast, but we'd really appreciate it as we're gearing up towards the season. Yep. Jerry, I thought we should start with the guys that did not make the cut, because I had some
things. I don't know.
I don't know.
That might be revealing.
You think it would be revealing? I think it's a good idea to put them here, because I want them to get their due, because they're great players. But the NL East is such a stacked division.
Okay,
that a lot
I'm
of these
cool
guys
with that.
Didn't make
How many names do you want to go deep?
I'm gonna shout out 3 names, because these were guys that were really in contention for my number 10 spot, and they just did not crack it.
All right, cool.
So the first one for me is. Who I consider the second best first baseman in the division. Matt Olson is not on my top 10. Kind of a down year last year. I expect him to be better this year. Really good pickup, really good contract with the Braves. Dude can slug, plays a great first base. He just missed my top 10, though.
I like that Matt Olson had a down year, which he did, and I think he hit 38 home runs.
Which is crazy.
34. He hit 34 homers.
Still a
he
nuts
He did
number.
Have a down year.
Who's the guy that missed your list?
Okay. Number one on my didn't make it list is Sean Murphy. He is a new addition to the Atlanta Braves, coming over from Oakland, like it seems like they always do. And he's out because I feel like his star is rising.
Right.
But he's got to learn a brand new pitching staff. He's a defense guy. He's like JT Realmuto with way more pop and less bat to ball skills, because he's great defensively, hard nosed, and catcher is going to be a premium this year, I think, with all of the changes in the rules. But learning a new pitching staff, learning a new league, facing brand new pitchers, the NL East is a gauntlet of starting pitching and relief pitching. So that was the first guy off my list.
I really love everything you said there. I do think he's got that defensive edge maybe over JT, but JT, who we'll talk about later, I'm sure, in both of our lists, kind of has that power speed threat, has been doing it for years, has been with the Phillies, just went to the World Series. So makes sense there.
So I honestly think that Sean Murphy has 40 homer potential.
Whoa.
I really do. He has some of the sickest natural pop that you'll see. His BP is unbelievable. He hasn't thrown it all together, but at the same time, he's still an amazing defensive catcher. He won a gold glove in 21, like wild. And also, he had zero protection in that Oakland lineup.
That's what I was going to say. One, he played for a, you know, poor Oakland team that really had nothing going for them in that lineup besides like
he was Seth legitimately Burnett. Circled in everybody's pregame, you know, pre-series meetings when the pitchers are going through it saying, this guy is not going to beat us. And he also, still had a very good year.
Kind of hurt me because we met Sean Murphy. Extremely nice guy. An A's kid.
Wait, great guy.
So nice. One of like the first players I got to interact with. Super friendly. So it was, it hurt me.
So now you're going to have to root against him.
I know. I've thought a lot about that and it hurts me. And now this is a guy that I also think might be on your list. He did not make mine because I just had to factor in, you know, defense, speed, all that. The 46 home runs from last year that led the National League. Kyle Schwarber is not in my top 10. He did not.
He's not in mine either. And I respect it. He's not in mine either.
It's tough. It's absolutely tough. It's defense.
And he was okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. But this list was hard. And I assumed when I was writing it that he would be in it. He's not in my list either.
I know. I had him penciled in, but he did not make it.
So my number two that didn't make it is this one's pretty much just track record. There's not enough evidence. And that's Michael Harris, the second.
Ooh, interesting. Okay.
I think he is a superstar in the making. I mean, his year last year, he's playing a premium defensive position and he tore the league up.
Yeah.
But I've seen a lot of guys come in their first year, do great, and then kind of, you know, fade away. So this is strictly, if he does it again, he's probably got a chance to crack the top five if he continues to rise. But he didn't make my list.
We were tough on the Braves, Jerry. That's what it sounded like. Sounded like we were tough on the Braves. Yeah, Michael Harris, great player. I mean, he only has that 1 year in the league, came up from Double A, but won Rookie of the Year, has the pop, played great center field, stole 20 bases. That's a tough one to have at number 11, but I understand it for sure. And I think with that, we can kind of dive in if you feel like you're ready.
Yeah, let's do it. Let's get in there.
All right. Do you want to give your 10 through 6 first or should I go first?
You want to go backwards?
Well, I don't want to start at the top. I feel like we should save number one for the end.
That's great. I'll do 10 through 6. I'll start.
Okay.
So, go ahead. it's controversial right off the top for me.
Oh, boy. Oh, God.
At number 10. Is Jeff McNeil for me.
Oh, okay. Okay.
So this was hard. And I when I first just wrote the list down, I was thinking he was probably going to be 5 or 6. But it got deeper and I almost bumped him out a few times. It's wild. He could be higher. He could be lower. The lack of power production is a big miss in this, but his bat to ball skills are great. I was thinking more towards the future of, I don't know how much that skill is going to set him apart anymore because of the lack of shifts. I think he's still a great hitter, but I think the inability for the defensive teams to shift on other players are going to kind of close that gap. And I don't think his defensive versatility is going to be quite as utilized anymore because I think he's probably just going to play second base.
Right.
Which is great. But for me, it was really hard. The Major League Baseball batting champion from last year is number 10 in his own division. And I feel terrible about it.
I mean, listen, I think your reasoning is incredibly valid. I think people really, it hasn't registered, at least with me as a fan, that like baseball is going to look a lot different next year. Like the shift is gone, all of that. And like, those are some things that made Jeff McNeil great. And like the Mets have plugged a lot of holes. So Jeff McNeil might not have to play right field or left field. He can just play second base. But yeah, 326 hitter last year, led MLB. I'm glad he's on your list because if he got bumped off, I think, you know, the pitchforks would have been out for you.
I don't think I could have done it. I really don't think, even if I believed it, I don't think I could have made that shift because the guy's just so good and he's so good defensively too. Anyway, so that's number 10. Number 9 is the guy that just missed the cut for you. His name is Matt Olson.
Okay.
He is. So I always think that first basemen defensively are completely underappreciated. I think as a value, they don't know how to really quantify it. A guy that can just pick everything makes your entire infield defense that much better. He's a big, long, rangy guy. Gold Glove winner in the past. And again, with the shifts, I think they're going to have to cover these. So I think his defensive value will go up. Plus, he had a down year and hit 34 homers and slugged or had over 100 RBI. So for that, Matt Olson, I think, is going to bounce back a little bit. And I still think that his signing is going to be a big one that haunts Mets fans. But he is my number 9.
Underrated part of Matt Olson's game that, you know, part of me regretted not putting him on here. He played 162 games last year. He was on the field every single day for the Braves. Don't think he DH'd much in that span either. I mean, if you're not a big fan of strikeouts, Matt Olson might not be your guy. 170 Ks last year, but still 34 home runs, was on the field every day. One of the better defensive first basemen in baseball, has won 2 Gold Gloves. Like, definitively, like, the race between him and Pete Alonso is so, so tight in my head because they're just so good at different things, but they both profile as elite first basemen. I think in my head, he was probably like number 11 on my list. So I'm glad he made your list.
That's okay. So my number 8 is the face of the franchise for me, and that is Brandon Nimmo. He is number 8 for me. He is a premier center fielder. Mm-hmm. He is an on-base machine. I think he's going to balance his power. The big thing for me in his style of game, the only thing that's really missing, and that I don't want him to try to do it because we've seen in the past, is steal bases. Mm. He's so fast, and his inability to do that, he makes up for it in triples, which he led the league last year in 7 triples, I think. But I think he's a great player. I think his ceiling is still in front of him. I still think he's got room to climb. So he's my number 8.
Love that spot for Nimmo. I mean, the theme with Nimmo is just kind of, can he play the full season? You know, can he do it year in and year out? But we saw the defensive improvements in center field. His OPS plus in his career was the same as he did last year. He just kind of achieved it in a different way, which I think gives Nimmo a whole different dimension to how good he can be. And I think Nimmo's best years might still be in front of him. And I'm really glad that he's going to be a Met for the next 8 years. So I love that pick.
Me too. Love that guy. And then at number 6 is
number 7.
I can't. What's that?
Number 7.
Number 7. Oh, number 7. That's right. It is a battle. First baseman, because at number 7 is the polar bear himself, Mr. Pete Alonso.
Okay.
Now, I didn't know where Pete go because he was in my top 5 to start, and then I started compiling. If he hits 50 homers, he climbs back up into that. But his average defense, I think, holds him back. That's why Matt Olson, I think, with his down year, offensively, I think, can pass. So this is a true race for first base in the NL East. But right now, Pete has the edge. I actually think the lack of shifting might help Pete because he loves diving to second base side. So he actually might have to cover that now instead of it being an error because the second baseman's standing right there. We'll see. But at only 40 home runs, you know what I mean? I think his lack of defensive value and base running, whatever that may be, just holds him back. So he's at number 7 for me.
Yeah, and I mean, we're going to have to go over the minute details because that's how close the gap is between all of these guys in the top 10. And when it comes to Pete Alonso's defense, there are limitations there. I do think he's improved for sure from what we saw in like 2019. But yeah, I mean, 131 RBIs, led MLB, 146 OPS plus, also played 160 games. So Pete Alonso definitely deserved to be up here for sure.
Yeah, he's one of my favorite players. And that was tough for me to see.
Yeah, man.
Totally. All right, at number 6 for me in the final of our first section. And this is a shocker for me because I can't believe he's at 6. Mm. And then just understanding it, that is the third baseman for the Atlanta Braves, Mr. Austin Riley.
Okay.
Austin Riley is an absolute animal. I think he's going to win an MVP at some point. He just signed one of those long-term deals for the Atlanta Braves. He plays a very solid, not quite Gold Glove caliber, but could be on the verge because I've seen him work and he has – you know, Ron Washington over there helping him out, a Gold Glove caliber third base. I think third base is a premium position.
Mm-hmm.
He also hit 38 home runs last year. He slugged 528. He had an OPS plus of 142. So the fact that this man is not in the top five for me blew my mind, because he is incredible. He had a 6.5 WAR last year, and he's going to be 26 this season. So this is a guy who's so good. I can't believe he's not in my top five. I love everything about Austin Riley's game, and he is my number six.
I mean, I love that spot too. I mean, Riley, I feel like I look at his baseball reference page and I get shocked, because I see him kill the Mets. Obviously, he does that all the time. But yeah, 38 home runs last year and still improved at third base, you know, played 159 games. He's like their new Chipper Jones, basically, already in the making, of course, because he is only freaking 26 years old going into the season. You could easily make an argument for him to be in the top five, but I do like where you placed him. And Jerry, how you doing? You made it through your 6 through 10. Are you breathing okay?
I'm breathing okay. Okay. It felt hard. Like, having McNeil at 10 hurt me. I mean, of course. Then Austin Riley finished sixth in MVP voting last year, and he finished sixth in my National League East voting. Like, that doesn't make sense. It's hard for me to understand, but I value things a little bit differently, I think, and I feel like some guys are going to have a bounce back, but I feel good. I feel strong. How do you think my 10 went, my 10 to 6?
I thought it went really well, especially because I think there's a lot of player overlap in terms of the group between our lists. I do have it ordered a little bit differently, but I think we're in a very similar headspace of who we think should be in the lower half and then the upper half, which, you know, we're always agreeing. So it makes perfect sense.
All right. Let's hear your 10 through 6.
Well, Jerry, before I tell you all about that, well, you know, we're placing bets today. We're placing bets today on who's going to be the best players in the NL East. And guys, you can place bets too at the DraftKings Sportsbook, the sponsor for today's episode. Thank you to them. Guys, Jerry's Bengals are deep in the NFL playoffs right now. We are at the AFC chip. We're on the
cusp.
Shout out Joe Burrow. He's going back to the big game, hopefully, and Jerry could be placing some bets. Right now, new customers can bet just $5 and get $200 in free bets instantly at the DraftKings Sportsbook. Take your shot at an even bigger NFL payout and boost your winnings with each leg you add in a same-game parlay up to 100%. And guys, we have a code that you can use to do it. Use code Shay, bet $5 on the conference championship games and get $200 in free bets instantly, only at the DraftKings Sportsbook with code Shay. Use their easy to use app, download it today, play some bets. Minimum age and eligibility restrictions apply. See show notes for details. Thank you to DraftKings for sponsoring this very contentious episode of Shay Station.
Yes, thank you, DraftKings.
All right, man, here we go.
Let's do it. Oh, and if you have some gambling problems, go out there, search the internet. You can find some gambling addiction issues. That's personal. Back to your list, my friend.
Write in our details 10. As well if you need those resources.
That's right.
Beautiful. 10. All right. So this is the only guy that was different from your layout of your 10 through 6, because I bumped out, as I mentioned before, Matt Olson. He's my number 11. Because my number 10 is Michael Harris II. Michael Harris II, won Rookie of the Year, instantly established himself as a premier center fielder in the game. I love this dude's upside. Maybe the only caveat to his game right now is the walk percentage down below 5%. Walked 21 times, struck out 107 times. So that's an area of his game I think could improve. But I mean, he's a power speed threat, 19 home runs, 20 stolen bases, nearly at a 20-20 in his first season. And he didn't even come up until May, I believe. He was the jolt that the Braves needed to go on an insane run to take out our Mets at the very end. And he's a huge piece of the Braves going forward. Already got his big Braves deal, as they all do when you're really good over there. And Michael Harris is going to be good for a very long time. And as you mentioned before, with those young guys over there, he's going to be 22 next season. Michael Harris, in my brain, deserved to be on this top 10.
Can't argue against it. That's you said it beautifully. You just missed mine, so I get it.
But here is where the overlap kind of begins. This was a tough one for me, because this was a guy that I think in my first iteration of my list, I had at number 6. Fangraphs Steamer really loves him for next year. I really love him for next year. He just got the bag. He has improved in so many areas of his game. My number 9 is going to be Brandon Nimmo. I thought he would be higher for sure, but there's just a ton of competition across the board. I mean, you know, we talked about the track record before, but Steamer projects him to be the second most valuable player in the National League East next year, right behind Ronald Acuna Jr., who maybe we'll talk about later in both of our top fives. Who knows? But Brandon Nimmo, on-base machine, you guys are very familiar with his game. Introduced a lot of slugging to his game last year with 16 home runs, led the National League in triples. So much to love about Nimmo. Can he stay healthy? I do think he will. He's entering his age 30 season. And I got my two top center fielders at 10 and 9 on my list.
I think that's great, man. And a Nimmo deserving. And I think his, like you said, he added some power. I think there's still room for power there. And I think he could balance that out with his amazing, like he had a down year as far as on base percentage goes. Right. I think he can balance that out and really figure out who he is and climb right back into where you think he belongs and even higher.
Absolutely. The 8 through 6 was, I think, the toughest part of my list. I don't know about you. I honestly, the top was a little bit easier for me than 8 through 6. Okay. I'm mulling the decision as I'm about to say it and, you know, get it published. And now it's permanent because it feels low.
Final thoughts. Okay.
It feels low because he's so good and he kills our team, but I am going to put Austin Riley at number 8. Obviously I got a little bias towards my Mets and I'm trying to be as unbiased as possible. Austin Riley, he's been doing it for a couple of years now. 2021 and 2022 were really the breakout of Austin Riley, the product that Braves fans thought they would see when he first came up in 19. He's becoming a seasoned MLB hitter as he goes for this third consistent year of production. You know, the minute details is really where it comes down to here for me, because he's never had that OPS above 900. He still hasn't cracked that 40 home run season. You know, the defense has improved, but that's always kind of been a limitation for him. But at the same time, you know, two top seven MVP finishes. You know, he played 160 and then 159 games back-to-back years. Steamer still likes him for next year as well, and that's a potent Braves lineup with a bunch of valuable guys in there. Austin Riley is going to be a problem for as long as that Braves contract lasts, which is going to be a very long time. And I think the gap between him and my next two players is so, so small. So small.
I mean Austin Riley, Silver Slugger, 7th in MVP, 6th in MVP, 160 games, 159 games. His defense, I think you might be underappreciating how good he is defensively, but he is getting better. I thought I had him low at 6 and you have him at 8. I hope he doesn't listen and take this personally.
If he's listening to Shea Station, I'll be kind of confused. I'm not gonna lie.
Okay. We're all teammates. He might just be chiming like
that's true.
You know, tuning in.
Maybe that's why you're rating him high. You know, you guys are buddies. That makes sense. All right, number 7. This is tough. Yeah, this is tough. All right, number 7. I have who I believe to be the best or the second best pure hitter in the National League East, and that's going to be Jeff McNeil. I factored in a lot of the things that you sort of factored in into rating him lower as a plus for Jeff McNeil. Jeff McNeil has arguably the best bat-to-ball skills in the division. He showed defensive prowess at 3 different positions in second and left field and right field. We've seen him play third pretty well as well. Jeff McNeil, you can kind of plug and play him wherever you want. And regardless of what you do, he's going to hit and he's going to make plays. And that's exactly what he did last year. I am a batting average guy, even though, you know, I'm kind of, you know, the analytical guy. I do love batting average, and he won the batting title last year. I think he got away from just trying to slug, and I think that really helped out his game. But I still think it could be part of his game some point down the line. I think Jeff McNeil, his best years might still be in front of him. He's a guy I hope the Mets lock up. He hit nearly 40 doubles last year in addition to everything else he did. And I think, you know, defense is something I factored in a lot in terms of kind of separating the different tiers of this list. And I think that's where Jeff McNeil got a little bit of an edge.
Yeah, I mean, I don't hate it. I think Jeff McNeil was number 6 on my initial list, and then I started to dive into the numbers. So I like him there. I think he fits. I think he's deserving. And you could argue that he could be higher. So I like
it. Absolutely. And then number 6, I went with my polar bear, Pete Alonso. He cracks up here. I mean, I was talking about defense before, but at the same time, a guy that can hit you 45 to 50 home runs in a season needs to be near the top 5. I do think defense kind of kept him out of my top 5 for sure. He's a guy that the WAR statistic doesn't love as much as the other guys, but he brings it every day on the field, played 160 games last year. We love our RBIs. He had 131 last year, which was by far and away the most in MLB. 146 on his OPS plus. He was one of the most feared hitters in the league as well. He walked intentionally 16 times last year, which led the National League, a top eight MVP finish. Somehow he still hasn't won a Silver Slugger yet, which is bonkers to me. But Pete Alonso, he's going to be probably the home run king for the Mets if he stays a Met for, you know, a decent bit of time here. And hopefully he's another guy that the Mets are prioritizing keeping around for the long term.
Yeah, I mean, I can't fathom the Mets without Pete Alonso because right. they need him. They need that power production. He has been nothing but reliable. I think his defense is very serviceable. It's not a negative, but it's right. not a plus. That is a guarantee. Like right. You can't add to his value because of defense, but you definitely can't take away. He's not a Schwarber Castellanos style.
Exactly.
But I love the polar bear. Think he could be Mount Rushmore of New York Mets, you know, down the road. Hopefully they lock him up.
Hopefully they do. And Jerry, we're down to it, man. We're down to it. So I think we'll go back and forth with each number here.
Okay.
That's cool with you.
That's cool. I want you to go first since okay. I got to talk about all the players first in the 10 through 6.
Sure.
Because we had basically the same 10 through 6, which is, you know.
Which is a good sign.
That's a good sign. So this is where things get interesting.
Okay.
So whoever picks the guy first will be able to talk about it. So I'll let you take the top five here.
Okay. So I said to you before we started recording that I think if there's one spot where we might have the exact same player, it's going to be number five. Because this guy is incredibly elite. He is the best player in baseball at his position. His numbers don't pop the same way as the guys that I have above him, but in terms of where he plays and the value he brings at that position, he deserves to be a top five player in the NL East. My number five is JT Realmuto. He's a rare breed of a speedy catcher who's also going to hit you 20 home runs in a season. He guns down runners with ease. He is the most well-paid catcher, and for good reason, because I do believe he's the best catcher in baseball right now. And he was a huge reason why the Phillies were able to go on that miracle run in the last playoffs where they made it to the World Series. JT Realmuto is a guy that I wish we paid to be our catcher. We did not, and that's okay because we got some talented guys in the pipeline. But he is a force to be reckoned with, a 6.5 WAR player in 2022. Fangraphs loves him for next year as well. Played in 139 games as a catcher, most of those games behind the plate. He is an integral part of that Phillies lineup that would be very hard to replace, and he's my number five.
I love it, man. I think JT Realmuto showed – like he might be the most underpaid guy in the game.
Maybe.
Because I'm a big defense guy. And JT Realmuto is the best, you know, defensive catcher. He also hit 22 bombs. You said he's a speedy guy. He stole 21 bases last year.
Crazy. Crazy.
That's top five.
Nuts.
That's, you know what I mean? And he does it every day. He's a leader on that team. It is a... an absolute steal for the Phillies. Imagine if he were going to be if he was a free agent this year, like he was, you know, at his age coming in.
Oh my God.
You know what I mean? He was a 28-year-old free agent catcher, like absolute wild. He's a three-time All-Star. He's finished two Gold Gloves, three Silver Sluggers, and he finished in the MVP voting twice. The guy is a stud, and so I love it. He is not my fifth.
Oh.
This wow. is where we have big departures, and I knew it was because you were like, we're going to nail number five.
Okay, I thought so. All right.
So at – hold on. Let me just pull this up real quick. Hold on.
This is going to be a dramatic reveal.
Yeah, this is a – at number five for me is a guy coming back to the NL East – is Trey Turner.
Whoa. Okay.
A guy that just got a $300 million contract is at number five for me.
Holy shit.
And I said I'm a big defensive guy, and he made improvements as a shortstop, but he is not a great shortstop. He's an average shortstop. He makes very good plays, but I don't think he's elite. He just looks really cool doing it, which is, you know, a plus. He's big, tall, 6'2". The guy is a speed guy, but he only stole 27 bases last year.
Sure.
JT Realmuto as a catcher stole 21. So to me, that is an overrated part of his game. I don't think he's going to continue to steal bases. He had 11 in 50 games last year, or I'm sorry, he had not 11, he had 32 in 2021, and that's a big departure.
Right.
So if he gets back up into the 30s, I'm for it. He's not a huge homer guy because he only hit 21 last year. Realmuto had more. But I think his ceiling is obviously up because he is a superstar. He is a true, legit superstar. But the numbers just don't say he deserves to be anywhere above for me defensively as a shortstop. So he is my number five.
Yeah, that is not what I was expecting for sure.
I know, but
you know, listen, like everything, like we said before, the gaps in between are going to be really tight here. Trey Turner did, you know, regress a little bit in some areas of his game that are considered the focal points of his game. But I do believe a big factor for me with having him above five, I think Citizens Bank Park is going to be a dream ballpark for Trey Turner. I think he's going to produce more power than ever. I think, you know, with the potent Phillies lineup surrounding him, he's going to be very, very well protected. And he was on the Dodgers for sure. That's another great lineup. But I think that in the immediate future, Trey Turner is going to be a very, very good player. Who knows how that contract ages, because paying that guy, you know, for 11 years, a guy that thrives on speed, could not fare well. But the Phillies are buying for now, so I understand where the move came from. I respect it, though. Number five, I respect it.
That's my number five.
How are we feeling?
Good. I think, to be honest, I thought Austin Riley probably deserved to be above Trey Turner.
Wow.
So for me, like if I were switching it, it's hard to tell a guy that just had $300 million gone his way that he doesn't deserve to be in the top five of his division. Right. But you got to do it. For me, he regressed in a lot of parts last year. He hit under 300 for the first time since 2019. Mm. You know, he just didn't, I don't know. I love his game. I love watching him play. I think he's great. He's a handsome guy. That helps.
That does help.
But this is a tough league, man. This is a tough list. So he was my number five. Do you want to reveal your number four, or do you want me to go?
I think you take this one now.
Okay.
All right.
At number four for me was a tough one. This guy could be number one going into next year's list.
Any of these guys in the top five, in my opinion, could be number one.
This one has a good chance because, you know, his name at number four for me is Ronald Acuña Jr.
Okay.
So he was injured. He blew his knee out in 21, came back, wasn't the same guy that he was before, but he still had 29 stolen bases on a knee that was sore every day. He only hit 15 home runs last year. But he still is one of the best players in the league at going into his age 25 season. I watched him in 2019 at 21 years old chase down 40-40. He had 41 homers and 37 stolen bases. Like, that is bonkers. The guy is elite superstar in this game. If he returns to being healthy, I think he has a chance to be number one. The big drawback for me is his defense.
Right.
And I think his ceiling defensively could be, he could win a gold glove defensively. I think if he really put the work in, he might do that. He's below average in right field. He has an absolute cannon and he's fast. So I think he should be able to do it. And he might do it just by getting reps out there. But that's the one thing holding him back, that and his health moving forward. And so Ronald Acuña is a star rising for me again. People forget about him at number four.
Yeah, I mean, if you ask me in 2019, 2020, 2021, I don't think there's any argument that he's not number one. I mean, the health has to be a concern because it's been a rough couple years getting him on the field. But at the same time, the upside of Ronald Acuña Jr. is a 40-40 player with upside defense. We haven't seen all of that. You know, the defense has regressed. He's become a primary right fielder. But at the same time, like, this dude is such a stud. He's only going to be 25 years old, even though he's been in the league for 5 years already. And believe it or not, Jerry, I mentioned before the podcast that I thought number five would be the same. It turns out number four would be the same because I also have Ronald Acuña Jr. at my number four. Again, this guy could easily be number one. I think one through four, or even five on my list could be considered interchangeable. I just need to see Ronnie play at least, you know, like 130, 140 games. Can he get back on the field, play every day, improve in right field, and still maintain the power and speed that he's been known for throughout his entire career? Because if he does, he's an easy MVP front runner and the face of the Braves like he had been in the past. I just got to see it first. I think the track record is the biggest thing for me, kind of sliding him down the list here.
Track record, I think, might be a strong word. I mean, this guy in 2018, the year he won Rookie of the Year, he played in 111 games. Here is his OPS from 2018 through 2022. 917, 883 the year he went almost 40-40. 987, 990 in 21. He was on his way to MVP in 82 games, so exactly – you know, half a season almost. He hit 24 homers, had 52 RBI. He stole 17 bases in half a season, and then he blew his knee out. He was on his way. That was 990. And then last year, he played in 119 games, but he was coming back off of a blown-out knee. So if this guy returns to that 2021 form, which was the best he's ever been, and rising, I think this guy is special. And if you've watched anything on Twitter lately, he's doing some things in winter ball that's
Oh, I have seen that clip. That's something for sure. I mean, yeah, no, I think you put it really well, because track record, you can kind of spin two ways. Like Ronald Acuña Jr.
It's health. If his knee is healthy, he's going to be an electric player. And I think his defense will get better simply by being reps. I mean, he's only 25. He hasn't played a lot of baseball just because he hasn't been able to do it. So
crazy. Absolutely crazy. Yeah. I mean, I love that for us. We finally nailed one together, which was good. And now we're at the top three.
So for me, I'm going to jump into it. Number three is JT Realmuto.
Okay. That's where
Realmuto is number three for me. He was your number five. I just think catcher is so valuable, and he is by far the best catcher in the game today. And it's not even close. And we saw as Mets fans and followers of the Mets, how tough it is when you have an absolute out in one spot in the lineup. We just couldn't fill it. We had the bright lights of Francisco Alvarez, the hopes and dreams of a guy that could be you know, he could be. We hope at some point he approaches what JT Realmuto is. He maybe have a better offensive years versus defense. Who knows? But Realmuto is the best defensive catcher in the game. He's also the best offensive catcher in the game.
Yeah,
it's bonkers. So I mean, for me, he is number one, and the fact that he's at or number three, the fact that he's with the rules and the base running, all the things that are changing, I think his defense is even going to play up this year.
Dude, I mean, I love it because I think catcher, we underrate all the time. And I think on one of my original lists, he was up there, I think at number three or number four. I had to slide him down, move him down slightly. But I mean, you cannot underrate how good JT Realmuto is and how much that brings to a lineup, because for so many teams, catcher is a black hole, kind of. It's just a guy that can play the position adequately and give you a couple hits at certain times. Like we love Tomas Nito. We're big Tomas Nito guys. We were really happy when Nito got paid.
Absolutely.
But imagine this lineup if you plug in JT Realmuto, the entire
be unbelievable. He would hit, he would be the guy protecting Pete Alonso. He might even be above Pete Alonso. He might move Lindor down. Because he steals bags. He's a better base runner than a lot of guys. Like, who knows? But it is an absolute luxury to have that guy in your lineup. And he, without him in their catcher, the Phillies are lost, I think.
Right. No, I definitely agree. And I mean, like, you plug him into any team that's a fringe contender or a serious contender, and that gives them 5 to 6 extra wins and fills a position for years that every team would like to have JT Realmuto. You know, in that position. So yeah. I love him at number three. I like that pick a lot. Okay. All right. This was tough. This was tough. Okay. At number three, and I think if you asked me in 2021, he would have been number one. I think that defense is a big thing here. Injury is a big thing here. And this was tough because this is, in my opinion, other than Aaron Judge, the most feared hitter in the league. My number three is going to be Bryce Harper. It's tough for me because he's going to be coming back from, I don't know if it's Tommy John surgery, but definitely fixing something with his throwing arm. We don't know what his defensive outlook will look like when he comes back, and he's going to be missing part of this season. But at the same time, it's Bryce fucking Harper, dude. Like, he's easily the best pure hitter in baseball, a mix of power, and he's still got that speed, still stole 11 bases last year. You know, he had an OPS above one dot in 2021, almost single-handedly brought the Phillies to the cusp of glory in the playoffs last year, and did it with basically a non-functional right hand, which is incredible. Bryce Harper is a guy that you could even consider underpaid at this point on his contract, because when he's at his best, there might not be a better hitter in the league. I think he slides down my list a little bit here because of positional value, of a little bit of the injury history in the recent years. And, you know, it's so hard, because saying Bryce Harper is the third best player in any list is going to raise some eyebrows for sure. But I mean, his baseball savant bubbles are a treat to look at because they're all red, and he is just such a fantastic hitter to watch it. You know, as long as he's not playing the Mets, he is going to be my number three, a very tough to say number three.
Wow. Harper's your number three, two-time MVP. He is going into his age 30 season. Now, I get it. This was hard for me too, because I think the last I read a couple days ago is he's going to miss half the year.
Yeah. That's the biggest thing for me right now.
He's going to DH when he gets back, and he might be able to play right field at the end of the year. That we're talking best players. We're not saying most impactful for next season. We're saying best players. That's a tough spot to put Bryce Harper in, because like you said, he is an absolute terror at the dish. The guy's unbelievable. And I feel like this Phillies lineup makes him even more valuable because of where he sits. He has 3 years of over 1,000 OPS. And we were just talking about guys with, you know, trying to touch that 900 number. This guy is unbelievable. And he's going to be healthy. Tommy John, as a position player, is not an easy rehab, but these guys bounce back just fine. He's solid in the outfield. He's learned how to maintain himself and keep himself healthy and able to play. He's played in, since 2018, he played in 159, 157, 58 in the 2020 season, 141 games, and then his elbow, you know, and then 99 games last year. Came back from that thumb. Again, not his fault. He got, you know, hit in the thumb. This guy is one of the best players in the game. He went from the most overrated player in baseball to the most underrated player in baseball. He went from people hate him because he would smile around the bases to being stoic. And I want to see more of that villain style of baseball in Bryce Harper. But the truth is, he puts his hard hat on and goes to work every day. Regular listeners to this podcast know how much I love Bryce Harper, so they're at no surprise that he's here. But he's number three, and I respect it. I love him as a player, and I think he's still got a Hall of Fame future, and they're going to miss him in that lineup.
Yeah,
and I think Philly for the first half. So,
I mean, it was tough because it's not his fault. It's exactly what you said. You know, he got hit on the thumb, and you know, he had that arm injury, and these are kind of things that are, you could even consider freak injuries. Like, Bryce Harper is not an injury prone player, but in my brain, Bryce Harper catalogs as a DH, and I'm thinking, how high can I put a DH on my list? And in the end, it was number three.
Don't hate it.
All right.
So you have Lindor. We both have Lindor left.
Okay.
And you have Trey Turner, and I have Bryce Harper.
Right.
So I am going to go at my number two. The guy we just talked about is Bryce Harper.
Okay.
So he is my number two, leaving Francisco Lindor as my number one.
I want you to do both.
Reasons about Bryce Harper, defensive. He doesn't play a premium defensive position. This is why Francisco Lindor is my number one. Lindor, I feel like people undervalue what he did because they still feel like 2021 is a part of it.
Mm.
Because he had such a down year offensively. People are saying he's, you know, not worth the price. But the truth is that his deal actually didn't kick in until last year. You know what I mean? Because he was, you know, it didn't kick in. But he is 5 months younger than Trey Turner, who just got paid. And, you know, that might be shocking to everybody. The guy hit 270 last year. He slugged 449. It's down from his, you know, his great Cleveland years, but there's still room for him there. I think he still can come back and be that 30 home run guy. He hit 26. He drove in 107 runs. He played in 161 games. He missed one game from a broken finger on his throwing hand. And I think that hurt him defensively more than it did offensively, but it did hurt his power production for like a solid month at least. So his 26 homers could have been 30 easily. I still think his best years might be ahead of him. He is an absolute gold glove caliber, should be for the future. The guy plays every day. He plays incredibly well. He will be even more valuable defensively because of the shifting and everything. A great leader on the field. He is my number one best player in the National League East. And that's Francisco Lindor.
I love it, Jerry. I love it. I mean, yeah, you know, we're talking about underrated players in the game. I think the spotlight went on Lindor early in that big deal. And I think last year he quietly put together one of the best seasons in baseball. I think, you know, if you're looking for the poster boy of we don't value defense enough, it's Francisco Lindor, because the guy hit 26 home runs. He had over 100 RBIs, batted 270, finished top 10 in MVP voting, and didn't even make the freaking All-Star team, man, if you can believe that. Shortstop, in my opinion, is the hardest position maybe to play in any sport. You know, I mean, maybe besides quarterback, if we really want to get to the nitty gritty. But having a plus in every tool of the game at your shortstop position is something that I consider invaluable, which is why two shortstops landed in my top two. It was almost Bryce Harper up here too, because he's that freaking good. my God. And it was tough. It was definitely tough because the gap between Francisco Lindor and Trey Turner is extremely slight, which is why I loved the Trey Turner move for the Phillies, because how do we get an edge in this division? Well, let's match what the Mets did and let's get an all-star shortstop of our own. In the end for me, Francisco Lindor did land at number two for me. I do think that the upside for Francisco Lindor is there. And I do think that the Mets deal for Francisco Lindor will age better than the deal for Phillies and Trey Turner. In the immediate future, in the right now, I do take Trey Turner as a better player. I think there it's just so slight because Francisco Lindor does have that defensive edge. He did break out and have a much better year last year than his 2021 season. But Trey Turner for a long time has been the best power speed threat in baseball. Rightly gets that big deal with the Phillies. I think he's going to rake at Citizens Bank Park, where Citi Field is kind of a tougher ballpark to hit in that Francisco Lindor is getting acclimated in. But still, you know, Trey Turner has put together 1, 2, 3 2020 seasons in his career. Last year, he finished top 10 in MVP voting, won a Silver Slugger, made the All-Star team. The strikeouts are a cause for concern for me, for sure. But at the same time, Turner played 160 games, improved defensively, was one of the fastest guys in baseball. And I think that, you know, 5 years down the line, if you ask me again, I could scoff at this notion that I ever put Turner above Lindor. But in my brain right now, I think it's just so like this could be the two best shortstops in baseball, and they happen to play for the same division. So I'm glad that they ended up at my top two. But right now I have Trey Turner at number one.
Wow. That's an upset for me. And I like it. This is subjective. You know what I mean? And this is what is it about Trey Turner's game that puts him above Lindor? Like, give me, is it the base running that edges him out?
I think so for me, it's going to be, I'm looking at a little bit of upside because I do think Trey Turner has easy 30 home run potential playing for the Phillies next season. I think you're going to see a lot of his RBI totals go up with this potent Phillies lineup around him. I think he's playing for a fun ball club that he's going to fit into well. And I think that these next 3 years could easily be the best of Trey Turner's career. I think the speed is a huge thing for me because that's kind of a thing that Philly was missing with their lineup. They had pretty much every piece in place in terms of power and contact hitting, and now they have the best speedster in baseball. And in 2021, Trey Turner won the batting title, got the most hits of any major leaguer, hit 28 home runs, stole 32 bases, finished top five in MVP voting, and did it playing for two different teams. I think, you know, I didn't really factor in playoff hitting, and that's kind of the thing that a lot of people bring up when they talk about Trey Turner. He does go a little bit quiet in October for sure, but at the same time, I think Trey Turner's upside these next 3 years, the Phillies are going to get their money's worth. We'll see 11 years down the line, but for these next 3 years, I think Trey Turner is probably going to be the best player in the National League East.
That's it's hard to argue against that. You're thinking upside, and I respect that a lot. Sure. Because I mean, it's no comparison who's been the better player up until this point. I mean, Lindor, you know, burst onto the scene and was one of the best players in the game right off the bat, like unsung in Cleveland, you know, middle America kind of thing. But that's, you know, this is what happens. Trey Turner's upside is pretty special, but the guy, you know, he's got it. To me, he's got to steal 35 to 40 bases, maybe even 45 to do that defensively, because I do think Lindor is that much better defensively. That's the gap for me. But if he hits 35, 30 plus homers and Lindor hits 25 homers, again, that's where it goes. I think Lindor is a 30 homer guy this year.
Okay.
I think he was a 30 homer guy last year until he broke his finger. I think Lindor, his defense was undervalued.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, Trey Turner might be better in the long run, you know, defensively. Again, his speed is so good. But we'll see, man. I like that debate. I like that we had one right there. Harper was there, Real Muto and Acuna. But for you, Trey Turner peaked at number one. And for me, I had him at number five, maybe sliding down. So I think that was our biggest, you know, our biggest mover and shaker.
No, I love that our top five had the same players in it, because I think that that breeds a good discussion. And I think that if you ask, you know, a fan who has all the numbers in front of them, the 6 through 10 and the 1 through 5 class of players are mostly going to be those five guys. I know we switched out Olsen and Michael Harris the second, but the NL East is so stacked with talent, and like there's so many, it just depends on what you value most as a fan. Do you value a guy that's going to play 162 and bring the best defense at the toughest position? If you do, it's probably Francisco Lindor. Do you want a guy that's going to give you 30-30 potential and also play that many games? It's Trey Turner. Do you want the best pure hitter in baseball? It's Bryce Harper. You know, like there's so many different ways to go about it, which is why I was so excited and nervous to do this episode, because there's going to be plenty of disagreement. Plenty.
This was fun, man. This was so fun. I think our two biggest, looking at our list side by side here, I think our two biggest differences were obviously Trey Turner and Jeff McNeil, because I had him at 10 and you have him at 7.
Yeah. Also, Austin Riley, I think, was 8 and 6, right?
Yeah, that's close. You know, to me, Riley, I think if I had to remake this, I think Riley moves up to 5 and I move Trey Turner right for this second, just to kind of also say that you're number one, to distance myself from that, just to be, you know, a contrarian. But I think we've got, especially with our, you know, Edwin Diaz, in my first thought, I was like, Edwin Diaz is going to sneak in at number 10 for me because he's so valuable. When we're talking about like just pitchers or players, and you're like, all right, we're going to separate position players.
If we did pitchers too, this would have been impossible.
Impossible. What we got to, we do have a, we're going to do this for pitching coming up.
I honestly think it might be easier than this. This was incredibly hard.
I don't think it'll be easier. I think we'll have the same, like we'll do. I think we'll have the same guys, but I think our value will be different.
I'm excited to do it. We'll probably do that next week.
This was fun, man.
Yeah. I hope you guys enjoyed the episode and are not wielding pitchforks and torches right now and coming to our
homes. Us know. Engage with us. Let us know what you think. Come at me. You know, don't be afraid. Ever since I said I'm not a fan of Field of Dreams and the vitriol that I got in return, I'm impervious to internet trolls. So come at me if you got me.
Like that word for you. Yeah, guys, definitely leave us a comment down below, letting us know what your list is, what you agreed with, what you disagreed with. We love to hear from you guys.
Give us your list.
Give us your list. I want to see it too. If you hate mine so much, let me see it. But yeah, this was fun. I had a good time.
I enjoyed it. You know, if this will be fun, like our PPPs that we have coming up for you guys that don't know, that is player projection, profiles and projections. So we're going to, you know, look at the New York Mets and kind of break down what people are looking like, their Steamer projections and all the Fangraphs and everything. And we're going to see what we think they're going to do moving into the future. There's one guy that we both left off and both didn't mention that could easily jump back in. He's old, but Starling Marte.
Yeah, I know. He was on my snub list.
You're talking about speed. He's a very Trey Turner-like player.
Yeah.
But he's playing right field versus center field, not premium.
And you talk about a guy that when the Mets were missing him, things fell apart. That's Starling Marte. People forget that when he wasn't around in September, that's the first time in the season things went awry. He's important.
Yeah, he's very important. And I think he's going to steal more bases again this year. I think he's going to be able to pick his spots better. It started so bad for him stealing bases. He was like forcing it and he kept getting thrown out on perfect throws. But Murphy and Real Muto being in the East are going
to
be tough
guys
for him
to run on.
Exactly. But yeah, I mean, that to me, that was the one guy. Who else were in your honorable mention just for fun?
I thought a Marlin would sneak their way in, but I had Jazz Chisholm and Luis Arraez right off my list as well. Those are my last two.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
Then Reese Hoskins, I think, deserves a mention because he really elevated his game last year.
I think so. He's still a class below Olsen and Alonso for me.
I agree. Yeah. But he's just underneath that. But he had a good year. Definitely an honorable mention. But
yeah, we could have done a top 15, but we would have been here for 3 hours.
No, this was great. Top 10 made it fun.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, so we'll see you guys next week. We'll do our top 10 pitchers. Hopefully, you know, you guys enjoyed our list and enjoyed this episode. And we'll see you guys soon. Let's go Mets.
Let's go Mets.